Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlov, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 5 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered primary versus secondary hypogonadism, where the problem starts and why it changes everything. Today we're getting into how does the HPG axis control testosterone? If you missed the last episode, the short version is this. Low testosterone is not one disease, and it is definitely not one lab number. Male hypogonadism is a clinical syndrome. You need persistent symptoms and biochemical evidence. A low number alone is not a diagnosis. Symptoms alone are not enough either. Then, once you know testosterone is truly low, you still have to ask a more useful question. Where is the signal failing? That's why the HPG axis matters. It's the control system, the wiring, the relay chain from the brain to the testes. And when men skip that step, they often get the wrong treatment for the right complaint. I see this all the time. A man feels flat, gets one testosterone test in the afternoon, never gets LH or FSH, and someone immediately starts talking about testosterone as if we already solved the case. We haven't. We just found the first clue. When I was younger in training, I used to think of testosterone as mostly a testicular story. The testes make it, the lab measures it, done. I was wrong. The testes are the last stop in the chain, not the whole chain. The process starts in the hypothalamus, a part of the brain that acts like the first traffic controller. It releases GnRH, gonadotropin-releasing hormone, in pulses. Not as a steady drip. Pulses. That detail sounds annoyingly academic until you see what it means in real life. The pituitary gland, which sits just under the brain, responds to those pulses by releasing LH and FSH. LH is luteinizing hormone. FSH is follicle-stimulating hormone. Then those hormones travel through the bloodstream to the testes. LH tells Leydig cells to make testosterone. FSH works mainly on Sertoli cells, which support sperm production. Different jobs, same axis. A simple way to picture it is a three-step relay. The hypothalamus starts the race. The pituitary carries the baton. The testes cross the finish line by making testosterone and supporting sperm production. If the handoff is weak at any point, the final number drops. That's why a low testosterone result by itself tells you very little about the actual cause. Last month, a guy in his early 40s uploaded outside labs to us. He had fatigue, low motivation, weaker gym recovery, and lower libido. Real symptoms. His total testosterone was low enough to raise suspicion, but there was no LH, no FSH, and no direct free testosterone. He had already been told he probably needed testosterone. Maybe. Maybe not. If his LH was high, that would suggest primary hypogonadism, meaning the brain is signaling hard and the testes are failing. If his LH was low or even just normal when testosterone is low, that points toward secondary hypogonadism, meaning the signaling from the brain is inadequate. Those are different diseases, different treatment logic, same complaint. Now add one more piece, because this is where men usually start to understand why external testosterone changes fertility. The HPG axis runs on negative feedback. When testosterone rises, some of it is converted by aromatase into estradiol. Men make estradiol too, and in this context, it matters a lot. Estradiol feeds back to the hypothalamus and pituitary and says, more or less, we have enough sex steroid on board. Ease up. Then GnRH pulses slow down, LH and FSH fall. The system quiets itself. That feedback loop is healthy. It's how your body keeps hormone production from overshooting. But it also explains why exogenous testosterone, meaning testosterone from outside the body, suppresses the axis. If you inject or otherwise take testosterone, circulating androgen levels rise. The brain sees enough hormone activity, largely through estradiol-mediated feedback, and turns down GnRH. Then LH drops, FSH drops, intratesticular testosterone drops. Sperm production can fall, sometimes sharply. One of the more frustrating conversations I have is with a man who started testosterone elsewhere for legitimate symptoms. Then, months later, he and his partner decide they want fertility sooner rather than later. He had no idea the treatment could suppress spermatogenesis. Nobody explained the mechanism. It wasn't malpractice by physics. It was just poor education. To be fair, testosterone replacement is not automatically the bad guy. It has a real place. The Traverse trial, which followed about 5,000 men for nearly 3 years, was reassuring on major cardiovascular events, and it did not show an increased prostate cancer risk. The most common issue is elevated hematocrit, which is why monitoring matters. But TRT is still a treatment that suppresses gonadotropins, suppresses sperm production, and is contraindicated in men seeking fertility. It is also not a treatment for optimization, bodybuilding, or anti-aging in men with normal testosterone, and it does not prevent or treat type 2 diabetes. Correct tool, correct patient, that's the adult version of the conversation. This is also why enclomiphene works so differently. Enclomiphene is the purified trans isomer, separated from the estrogenic cis isomer called zuclomiphene. That separation matters because zuclomiphene is the part associated with estrogenic side effects like visual disturbances, mood changes, and gynecomastia. Enclomiphene blocks estrogen receptors at the hypothalamus. In plain English, it reduces the brain's ability to see the estradiol brake signal. GnRH rises, LH rises, FSH rises. The testes are asked to make testosterone through the body's own pathway. That is the opposite direction of TRT. With enclomiphene, the axis stays on. Testicular size and function are maintained. Spermatogenesis is preserved, and in some men, it improves. Hematocrit risk is generally lower than with TRT. And if the underlying suppressive factors improve, some men may be able to come off it. That makes enclomiphene the first-line treatment for secondary and functional hypogonadism when LH is below 8 milli-international units per milliliter and the axis is intact. If LH is already high and testosterone is low, that means the testes are not responding. Enclomiphene cannot coach a broken speaker by turning up the radio. The single most common diagnostic mistake I see almost every week is incomplete testing. A guy gets total testosterone only. Maybe estradiol if someone is feeling adventurous. No LH, no FSH, sometimes no repeat test. That is not enough. Without LH and FSH, you cannot classify primary versus secondary hypogonadism, which means you cannot choose the correct treatment. And there's another layer. Many men are told their testosterone is normal because total testosterone looks acceptable on paper, while free testosterone is low and symptoms are very real. This happens because total testosterone and free testosterone are not the same thing. Free testosterone is the fraction available to tissues. It is the biologically active pool you actually care about. At VIDMA, we prioritize direct free testosterone measurement by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS-MS. Most labs still lean heavily on immunoassays, and a lot of free testosterone testing out there is basically educated guesswork. We do not order SHBG as a separate workaround test. We measure free testosterone directly. That helps us catch hidden testosterone deficiency that can be missed when total testosterone looks decent, but the free fraction is low. The practical thresholds we use are straightforward. When symptoms persist, total testosterone below 350 nanograms per deciliter or free testosterone below 100 picograms per milliliter can support the diagnosis. It's around 350 nanograms per deciliter, to be exact. But again, that number lives inside a bigger diagnostic picture. You still need symptoms. You still need morning testing. You still need LH and FSH. Morning testing matters because testosterone follows a daily rhythm. Levels are highest in the early morning, and that rhythm does not completely disappear just because a man is older. If you test randomly in the afternoon, especially after food, you add noise to a system that already has normal biologic variation. One random draw is a weak basis for diagnosis. Better is a morning draw, ideally between 7 and 11 says. Better still, is a repeat morning draw with the right assay. Our standard men's health panel reflects that logic. Total testosterone by LC-MS-MS, free testosterone by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS, MS, LH, FSH, estradiol, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, PSA if you are 40 or older, insulin if BMI is over 25, then lipid panel, prolactin, and thyroid testing when clinically indicated. Not because more boxes checked is impressive. It isn't. It's because each of those tests helps answer a specific clinical question. Now, let's talk about why the axis gets suppressed even when there is no permanent structural damage. Functional hypogonadism is the most common real-world pattern I see. The axis is there. It is capable. It is just being pushed down by reversible factors like obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, poor sleep, medications, and excess estradiol signaling. Obesity is a very common example. More adipose tissue means more aromatase activity. More aromatase means more conversion of testosterone into estradiol. More estradiol means a stronger brake signal to the hypothalamus. Then LH output falls, and testosterone production falls with it. This is one reason body fat changes are not just cosmetic in men with low T, they are endocrine. I like lifestyle treatment. I'm not anti-salad. But in clinic, I try to be honest. Weight loss can improve testosterone, yes, but the average increase is usually modest, around 1 to 2 nanomoles per liter, and most lost weight is regained within a few years. That is why, for functional hypogonadism, the best first move is often lifestyle modification plus enclomyphen, not lifestyle versus treatment, as if it has to be a moral contest. We'll spend a full episode next time on medications, substances, and lifestyle factors that quietly wreck the axis, but one central break deserves mention today, and that's prolactin. Elevated prolactin can suppress GnRH and cause secondary hypogonadism. Sometimes the cause is a pituitary adenoma. Sometimes it's medication-related, especially with things like antipsychotics or metoclopramide. In those cases, the target may be the prolactin problem itself, not immediate hormone replacement. A few times each year, I see men who were treated as simple low testosterone cases when the real issue was central, meaning in the pituitary or hypothalamus. That is why pituitary evaluation matters when the pattern fits. If testosterone is low and LH and FSH are low or inappropriately normal, and especially if prolactin is elevated, or there are headaches, visual symptoms, or severe testosterone deficiency with inadequate gonadotropins, pituitary MRI becomes important. The European guidelines specifically emphasize severe cases, especially when testosterone is around 6 nanomoles per liter or lower and the gonadotropins are not responding as they should. Sometimes the axis is merely suppressed. Sometimes there is a lesion. Those are not interchangeable situations. Once you understand the axis, treatment logic becomes a lot less mysterious. If testosterone is low and LH is high, often with FSH high too, that is primary hypogonadism. The brain is already pressing hard on the accelerator. The testes are not responding adequately. In that setting, stimulation therapy will not restore normal production. Educationally, TRT is the hormonal treatment that makes sense there. VIDMA does not prescribe TRT or injections, but it is important to understand when that is the correct medical logic. If testosterone is low and LH is low or normal, that is secondary hypogonadism. If the axis is intact and LH is below 8, enclomiphene is usually the right first move. It works with the body's own regulation, preserves fertility, maintains testicular function, and gives you room to address the underlying causes at the same time. When erection issues or urinary symptoms are also part of the picture, the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination tablet can be useful. Then there is organic pituitary disease, which is a separate lane. In that setting, specialists may use gonadotropin therapy, such as HCG, and if fertility is the goal, sometimes FSH as well, to bypass pituitary signaling. But for the much larger group of men with secondary or functional hypogonadism, who do not need immediate fertility-focused treatment, enclomiphene is often the cleaner first option. A few common questions come up again and again. The first is, my testosterone was low once. Does that mean I have hypogonadism? Not necessarily. You need persistent symptoms and biochemical evidence. You want the lab drawn in the morning. You want it repeated if the first result is low or borderline. And you want LH and FSH at the same time. One number, out of context, is not a diagnosis. It's a clue. The second is, my LH is normal, so my brain must be fine. Not necessarily either. If testosterone is low, a normal LH may actually be inappropriately normal. The pituitary should be pushing harder. Think of it like a car trying to climb a hill. If the speed is falling and the engine is barely working harder, that is not normal effort. That is under-signaling. The third is, TRT and enclomiphene both raise testosterone, so they're basically the same. No. Same destination on the lab sheet, very different route through the body. TRT raises testosterone from the outside and suppresses LH, FSH, and sperm production through negative feedback. Enclomiphene raises testosterone by stimulating your own GnRH and LH signaling, fertility implications, testicular size, hematocrit risk, and reversibility all look different because the mechanism is different. The fourth is, if I just lose weight, everything will fix itself. Maybe some of it will improve, and I want that improvement, but the real world is less tidy. Functional hypogonadism is often reversible in theory and sticky in practice. Men lose weight, testosterone rises a bit, stress and sleep stay bad, weight creeps back, symptoms linger. That's why I prefer a plan that acknowledges biology instead of pretending motivation alone can out-negotiate endocrine feedback. The fifth is, if my total testosterone is normal, I'm fine. Not always. I've seen men with decent total testosterone and clearly low free testosterone who feel terrible. They are told everything is normal because the wrong number got all the attention. That is one reason we prioritize direct free testosterone testing instead of guessing. If you take only a few things from today, keep these. First, test correctly. Morning, ideally fasting, between 7 Nos and 11 Haus. Get total testosterone and direct free testosterone with a reliable method. Get LH and FSH every time. If they're missing, the workup is incomplete. Second, diagnose correctly. Hypogonadism requires symptoms plus biochemical evidence. At VIDMA, when symptoms persist, we use total testosterone below 350 nanograms per deciliter or free testosterone below 100 picograms per milliliter as decision thresholds. But those numbers mean more when they are repeated and interpreted in context. Third, classify the pattern. Low testosterone with high LH points to primary hypogonadism. Low testosterone with low or normal LH points to secondary hypogonadism. If LH is below 8 and the axis is intact, enclomiphene is generally the first-line treatment. If LH is high, enclomiphene is not the answer because the testes are already failing to respond. Fourth, respect red flags. Elevated prolactin, headache, visual changes, very low testosterone with low gonadotropins. Those are reasons to think about the pituitary, not just hormones. And once treatment starts, monitor it like an adult. We check follow-up labs after the first month, then every 6 months, and adjust based on symptoms, hormone response, CBC, metabolic markers, and the rest of the clinical picture. Sometimes we order the panel. Sometimes we review good outside testing you already have, including uploaded labs from services like Function Health. Either way, the goal is to make the right diagnosis first. Next time, we'll get into medication, substances, and lifestyle factors that quietly kill your testosterone. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to VIDMA for free, or order labs through our special offer at VIDMA.com.